Hey everybody, Nate here. Before the show, I just wanted to take a minute to talk about our sponsor, the Snack Nanny. The Snack Nanny is the latest, greatest spill-proof bowl. It's the first snack bowl for kids with a self-closing door. The Snack Nanny allows kids to snack freely without overeating, keeps kids entertained, and prevents them from creating a mess for mom and dad to clean up. Kids and parents love the Snack Nanny. It's easy to use, easy to clean, and includes portion control features that only the Snack Nanny offers. To order, go to www.snacknanny.com. or order from Amazon. Remember, you support our sponsors and they support us. Thanks, and Nihei Debiru. Hi everyone, and welcome back to Chop Talk. I'm your host, Nate England. If you listen to the show on iTunes, please write a review and give us a 5-star rating. Also, don't forget to like the show on Facebook. Let's start off this week by announcing a few upcoming events. On April 24th and 25th, Robert Bowles will host the ISA International Martial Arts Seminar in Fort Wayne, Indiana. To find out more, visit www.shuri-ru.com. From June 11th to 15th, Neil Stoltzmark will hold the 14th Annual Warrior Gashku Seminar in Milwaukee, Wisconsin. This year's guest of honor is Minoru Nakazato, 10th Dan and head of Shorinru Shorinkan. Find out more at www.AuthenticAncientArts.com. From June 26th to 28th, Philip Keppel will host the 31st USKK International Karate Kobudo Championships Seminar and Tournament in Peoria, Illinois. To find out more, go to www.uskk.org. From October 2nd to 4th, also in Peoria, Illinois, Joseph Walker will host the Kagami Bikari Gashku. Go to AOK Karate on Facebook for further details. And finally, the weekend of November 6th, 7th, and 8th in Cincinnati, Ohio, the Kosho School of Karate will host Jodo and Iaido expert and the 2014 Japanese National Bato Do Champion, Sensei Chusho Fukuhara, along with Shuriken expert Ikenaga Sensei and top student of Goju Ryu's Yoshio Kuba, Miwa Kanazawa, along with several other members of the Meisui Kan Dojo in Naha, Okinawa. To find out more, email koshoschoolofkarate@gmail.com or call 513-510-3844. If you have an upcoming seminar, tournament, or other martial arts event, please let us know, and we'd be happy to announce them on the show. This week's guest is Hideki Harada, co-owner and executive chef of Kaze, a Japanese pub and sushi bar located in the Over-the-Rhine neighborhood of Cincinnati, Ohio. Hideki is an experienced chef who has worked at numerous fine dining establishments in Cincinnati and abroad. From 2009 to 2011, he honed his sushi skills training in Japan. After returning to Cincinnati in 2011, he opened Kaze along with his business partner John Zipperstein. Kaze combines three venues into one, a contemporary dining room, a hip bar and lounge, and a year-round landscape beer garden. Kaze has become a local favorite for the neighborhood as well as the destination for foodies around Cincinnati. It has also played a big part in the revitalization of the Over the Rhine district. In today's episode, we talk about Hideki's experience growing up in a Japanese household in Cincinnati, as well as his early experiences in the restaurant industry. He also talks about the difficulties of managing a restaurant and the events that took him to Japan. For more information on Kaze and executive chef Hideki Harada, visit the restaurant at 1400 Vine Street in Cincinnati, Ohio. Go to www.kazeotr.com. That's www.kazeotr.com. Or check out Kaze OTR on Facebook. Thanks for listening and enjoy the show. All right, I'm sitting here with Hideki Harada, the executive chef and co-owner of Kaze Restaurant in Over the Rhine in Cincinnati. How are you doing?
I'm good. How are you doing?
Good. Not bad. Not bad. We've talked about doing this for a while, so I'm glad we finally got a chance to sit down. Let's start off. Why don't you tell us a little bit about the restaurant? I've been in there a couple of times. It's a great place.
We like to think of it as being a gastropub, smaller dishes, anywhere from a Korean cuisine, Chinese, and me being Japanese, a lot of it has a lot of the Japanese influences as well. So, it's just still a mixed breed of all Asian cultures,
okay.
All the good good parts pulled in as one.
Yeah, and it's not just the restaurant either, but there's a beer garden, and there's a bar section also. So kind of whatever time of day you go there, you're gonna have something going on.
It's it's cool because it's almost like there's three venues in one place. You got your restaurants on one side, and then the other side is almost like a bar lounge type of establishment, and then the outdoor bar is almost kind of like kind of like that tiki feel. The corrugated wood and kind of like the aesthetic feeling.
And I know the guys who built it are proud of it. I was working on another project with Core. Right. Their office, I believe, is above yours.
Mm-hmm. So. That triggers me to hit my silent.
I turned off one of my phones and then the other one goes off.
Yeah,
I feel like a drug dealer. I have pagers everywhere. I was saying I did a project with Core Construction because I'm normally an architect, but I'm not doing the karate and the podcasting and the other 100 things I'm trying to do unsuccessfully. They took us to lunch down there, and they were super proud, and they gave us a tour of the place and pointed out the ceiling, and they took us back to the bar. It's a really cool design, and they did a really good job on it. And you're a co-owner and the executive chef, right?
Very glamorized babysitter and all of
wait, are you the babysitter or is somebody babysitting you? Which one is it?
Oh, I should be babysat, but I have my business partner who's been in the business for a very long time and also a very successful restaurateur, John Zipperstein. So he babysits me.
Okay.
He's always been the mentor and kind of like showing me how to run the restaurant in a very black and white point of view instead of letting them run rampant.
Right. You keep in control of the employees.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, let's come back to that, but let's start off. Let's get a little bit of your background.
Sure.
So you're originally from Cincinnati.
Yes, I was born in New York, raised here in Cincinnati.
Okay.
So.
And your parents are originally from Japan.
Yeah.
Okay. But, growing up in the U.S., was there a big... Did your parents have a big influence of the Japanese culture, or were you... I'm not worried about that. I'm American now, Dad. You know,
right.
What was the...
Well, yeah, it was very... structured. My childhood household was, I saw it as being the norm, but I think if an American would step into our house, it would be like a culture shock for them, like taking shoes off or, kind of the... Some of the family moments, like, some families hug and kiss, like, when you see them.
And you guys have
formal bowing.
Yeah, it's like... You're getting Zare and...
So
if you came home with a B-plus on your report card, you had to commit seppuku, stuff like that.
It was to that extreme. It was just, most of my friends probably thought that we were very, like... separated, like not so close to each other, but we were. It's
sure.
Just we don't show it physically or, kind of
okay, or emotionally. Or
sure. Emotionally, yeah.
So listen,
don't cry.
when you grew up, was there Japanese being spoken in the household or the trying to switch? I know, with your daughter who's in the background a little bit here and some of our other friends.
Right.
Who have young children, they're living in America, but they're still Japanese spoken in the household. The kids are learning Japanese and English at the same time.
Right.
Was it the same with you? So did you have a chance to learn both?
Yeah, it was, it wasn't as strict. I did go to a Japanese school up until the third grade, but then the learning curve, it was just, a lot of the kids that go to those schools are only here in the States for only 5 years or at max.
Maybe the dad or the mom got transferred here for work.
Right.
And so they know they're going back, so they just want to keep the kid up to speed.
Exactly. And for me, it was different. My dad was transferred here working for Fujitech back in the 80s or something, or before I was born, so it was probably the late 70s. But then it just became more of a permanent stay for him. So it was almost like it became Japanese becoming a secondary while English was primary. Mm-hmm. And my Japanese, my English kept progressing where my Japanese fell behind, and I'd have free time, so I'd go to Japanese school on Saturday.
Right.
So it became hectic, dropped out. Mm. And
it wasn't really a priority, and you know, family was going to stay here permanently, right. Basically, so right. There wasn't as big a need.
Yeah, so I just knew my basic Japanese.
You know, was it, and so you had the Japanese culture growing up, so there was never any the rebellion phase, so that's maybe where the interest in the sushi and the Japanese cuisine got started?
Yeah, the Japanese cuisine, I mean, we ate Japanese at home, so, you know, when I had friends over, they'd be like, what is this? It's not like, you know, Friday spaghetti night is like Thursday taco night. Mm-hmm. It was like every day is Japanese, like curry or right. Japanese food. So that,
and you know, and that's a good point. And you're growing up, we're about the same age. Mm-hmm. So, you know, we're talking about the 80s, early 90s mm-hmm. here, where I think even in Cincinnati, now you go any direction, you can find a sushi restaurant. You go to all these Asian fusion right. places and you can find something. Most people right. have tried it. But if we're talking, you know, even 10 or 15 years ago, no. There's most people, it's like, you haven't deep fried that fish?
Yeah.
You know, you're going to get worms. What's wrong? What's wrong with you? And so I bet, especially growing up, that must have been extremely bizarre.
Yeah, because the fish diet, you know, it's probably in the last 5 years, it's really picked up. I think people are eating more of seafood mm-hmm. compared to probably in the 80s, where it's meat and potatoes and meat
sure.
potatoes every day. So it's good to see. But yeah, I mean, growing up, I always had that cuisine, Japanese food that's always around me. We always go eat Japanese food or sushi, mm-hmm. but I didn't really want to start cooking until that was later.
Looking for a way to gain an edge on the competition? Want to give your body some much-needed relief and relaxation? Try Medical Resort ATEC, Okinawa's specialist in sports therapy and wellness care. ATEC offers customizable massage therapy. Try their oxygen chamber for increased metabolism and faster recovery from injuries. Or take their stretching course to improve flexibility. ATEC is used by professional athletes from the Ryukyu Golden Kings, FC Ryukyu, and Ryukyu Corazon. Stop into their center Monday through Saturday at 12830 Oroku in Naha City, Okinawa. Call 098-859-1890 or visit them on the web at www.sanso-atac.com. That's www.sanso-atac.com. Hey everybody, Nate here. I just want to take a minute to talk about our new sponsor, the Micro Bar. The Micro Bar is an innovative, cutting-edge new type of seating that's perfect for restaurants, cafes, bars, and even the party room at home. The Micro Bar is a very versatile product, and it's perfect for residential or commercial applications. It can be used alone or grouped with other Micro Bars to create multiple seating arrangements. The Micro Bar is perfect for anywhere that seating and standing people interact. So whether you're looking for a new piece of furniture for the breakfast nook at home or you're remodeling a restaurant, go to www.microbar.net. That's www.microbar.net. Or call 513-232-9405. Thanks again for supporting our sponsors.
So when did you get involved in the, you know, the business or the, you know, the chef or doing it professionally?
Well, first job ever in high school was, one of my first jobs, I was a wing shaker at BW3.
So. All right. It's a very important job.
That was the beginning of my culinary adventures. And it was a lot of other things, too.
I always hate it when those guys don't put enough sauce in there.
Yeah. Well, you know, you can just request extra wet or extra sauce right. or something. You know, they give you extra pumps. Okay. But that was interesting because it introduced me into this, it was like another culture. It was just, you know, your first job, really. Mm-hmm.
with people that you're not, you don't know, with management, you are given direction. So, but you got paid for it. Mm-hmm. And it was just became this, like, you know, you entered some rebellious, you know, because cooks, chefs, and people in the restaurant business, there, it's a different breed.
Okay.
Of people, I feel like, and it was just a
good unemployable trash. Felons.
Yeah, that was almost kind of like that.
Okay.
And I was 15, 16, and just in this, and then I had no idea what they would be talking about behind my back or whatever, because you know, they're probably talking about getting drunk or something,
right?
Or partying it up or something. But it was interesting. And then, I mean, I was a good kid. I didn't really get into anything like that until my later years as well.
But right.
It was
until you were 17,
18. Yeah, right out of high school. But after that, I just kept going and working as, you know, a Quiznos sandwich artist.
Okay.
Just having a job. It was always just a job.
All right.
And restaurant always seemed to fit in pretty well with people. I could always achieve what was given to me. It wasn't like I'm lazy and I don't want to do this. I was always wanting to, you know, I would wash dishes when it wasn't even my job. I'd just I see a stack of dishes. Like, I can't look at that stack of dishes and not do anything about it.
So. Right.
I just go in and do it, and then they'll be like, okay, you want management? I'm 16 years old, bro. I don't want management.
You're the only one doing it. Here, okay, so we'll get into this early, because I wanted to get into this at the end of the show.
Okay.
The customer service, man. I go into restaurants, and nobody bothers to seat you.
Yeah.
If they seat you, nobody bothers to take your order. If they take your order, they don't bother to bring it.
Right.
You know, I had a friend, actually, we had her on an earlier episode a few weeks ago, Musky Tomiyose, and I gave her, I was kind of her tour guide around the U.S., and she had never been to the U.S. before, and she's the nicest person you'd ever meet, but she was like, what's wrong with the service? Because they wouldn't bring you drinks, they wouldn't take your order, they were rude to you, they were super pissed off.
Right.
And it's such a huge contrast to Japan, where, now don't get me wrong, there's some places you can't go in.
Right.
It's like they go in and they give you the X, you know, dumb it.
Yeah.
Go away, you know, go to the you know, the tourist district, gaijin.
I mean, they're probably more or less looking out for you because they're like, I don't speak English. If, you know, come in and I...
Maybe sometimes.
Sometimes.
Okay. But once you're in,
yeah.
I mean, they're on it. You know, how can they help you? Can they take your order? Everything, everybody's right on the ball.
Right.
And you don't get that here.
No. I don't know. It's just the delegation of work. It's you know, I feel like it's just... delegate when you need to, but, you know, don't expect everybody to do their job. So just take it and do it your own, do it yourself, because that way it's you're in charge of it all, and then you can delegate. Like, okay, so I just took your table. I gave them water.
Mm-hmm.
I greeted them. You just go and take their order from there. You know,
right.
Just like help each other out,
right?
Kind of. And I think that's what restaurant industries should be all about. But yeah, I think a lot of restaurants now, that especially cities like Cincinnati, it's hard to find good help.
Mm.
It's becoming so saturated, I think, with all these fine dining and great restaurants popping up all over the place, that it's hard to find that caliber of service.
There's only a few people that level to go around.
The professional server,
and they've been snatched up. And maybe some of the
even, you know, the B, places. Even the B servers are now snatched up. It's like, now we're, I hate to say this, but it's like your Frisch's and your Bob Evans and your family restaurant servers that are now in that group to be able to be a part of like the fine dining industry. It's crazy. But, you know, it's not, I'm not saying you can't teach an old dog new tricks.
Sure.
You can definitely, if you get the young ones and you form them, you can definitely take them the right direction. I just think it's Cincinnati is a little...
It's a challenge.
It's a challenge.
It's not just Cincinnati.
You know, I think it's New York too. Everybody's having that problem.
Yeah.
Mawari no hito ni sa wo sukete imasen ka? Anata no karada wa kyusoku wo hitsuyo to shite imasen ka? Sports Massage Kenko no Specialist Medical Resort ATAC wo ichido torai shite mite kudasai. ATAC de wa okyaku sama no karada ni awasaita massage wo okunaimasu. Mata, ATAC no sanso shitsu ni mo torai shite mite kudasai. Taisha koujo, kega no soki kaifuki ni kikimasu. Junansei wo takamero, stretching course ni mo torai shite mite kudasai. ATAC wa pro chimu, Rukyu Golden Kings, FC Rukyu, soshite Rukyu Korazan no senshu mo ryo shite masu. Zehi ichido goraiten kudasai. Open, getsuyobi kara, doyobi made, Okinawa ken, Naha shi, Oroku, 1 no 28 no 30. Denwa bango, 098-859-1890. Homepage mo, checko shite mite kudasai. www.sanso-atac.com www.sanso-atac.com Ego, Portugalgo, Spengo, Nihongo ga hanaseru staff ga imasu. Hey everyone, like the show? Enjoy hearing interviews with martial artists from around the world? Then share it with a friend, family member, co-worker, everyone at your dojo, your fellow karateka. You can find new episodes every Sunday at choptalk.podbean.com. That's choptalk.podbean.com. And don't forget to like the show on Facebook. Thanks. Remember, if you have an upcoming seminar, tournament, or other martial arts event, let us know, and we'd be happy to announce it on the program. And now, back to the show.
You know, so let's go back then. You, at a certain point, you're working at the Quiznos.
Yeah.
You got your wing-shaking experience. When did the sushi start, and when did you decide to go to Japan to do it?
Sushi started, I was a senior in high school, and I always took my friends out to eat sushi, because they were like, what is sushi? I'm like, yeah, it's great, it's really good. I take them out, we go out, and like, where Ando is.
Yeah, sure.
Blue Ash now, but it used to be in Lebanon.
Okay.
So we drive out there, go there. And, I mean, for me to be able to, be hospitable towards them, and then they're just blown away.
Mm.
That was, I wasn't even doing the sushi, but I was just like, man, this is cool to be a part of something that's new to them.
Right.
So, I mean, that's where I decided the culinary was probably something that I might just be stuck in.
Mm.
But I went to college or tried college. At UC for psychology.
Okay.
And I was really interested in the human connections and then all of that. But I did not know the academics. I cannot do academics. It was just sit there memorizing. Yeah, that's not something I can do. So I transferred to Columbus State with a sociology major.
Okay.
And then I dropped out again, but then when I was dropping out, I needed a job.
Sure.
So I found a job at this sushi bar, restaurant Hama. It was in East of the Mall in Columbus.
They're probably excited to have an actual Japanese guy in there instead of what they normally do, is just like put a Mexican in a kimono.
Yeah, but then back then it was like I think they had Honda. Honda was like in Columbus, so they actually had. There's one white dude.
Okay.
His name's Kuma.
Okay.
So, Bear.
Okay. And wait, it's a white dude named Kuma.
Yeah,
it wasn't his name.
Yeah, it's his nickname. But he's a crazy.
He's like now. He's like some of these karate guys that rename themselves. Yes. You know, and Dragon Fire or something like that. Right. So is this what this is what he's his done?
Name, yeah. Okay. He's like a 6'5", like 250, like just like a UFC fighter. Yeah, making sushi, and then. Yeah, like, there was that. I wanted for a job application to be a server, just because I spoke somewhat fluent Japanese, and I spoke fluent English, so maybe I could get, like, a serving gig.
Sure.
The executive chef and the owner is like, I'm not hiring servers right now, but I'm training sushi chefs. I'm like, okay, that's, like, a left field thing. I love sushi, but, I mean, I have school that... You know, I wasn't really passionate about attending.
Right.
But
you had to go.
I had to go.
To please the Japanese parents.
Right. And it was just not happening. It wasn't happening. So I slept on it and I took the job. It was under minimum wage job.
Wow.
And the guy was very, very Japanese in a way that I didn't even know it was Japanese. It was like the restaurant industry Japanese.
Okay.
This is brand new to me.
Okay.
It's like the passive aggression, the kind of like, you know, no holds bar kind of angst, like when you did something wrong, you know, or like take an empty sake box and throw it at the back of your head, you know, kind of like, it was just like, this is America. Come on, man. You can't even then. It was like, what kind of what kind of establishment is this? Right. I was brand new in this, but I took it, and I felt like maybe I was like this, you know, masochistic kind of young kid. Just like maybe this is the only way I learned.
Because so he was extreme, even if he was in Japan.
He was just full blooded Japanese chef that was. He worked in Japan, worked in LA, and then worked in Columbus. So I started out there. In the meantime, I transferred from Columbus State to Ohio State with a hospitality degree.
Okay.
And then, so basically
done. Well, hospitality, we were getting closer, a little bit closer to what
I was aiming for.
Right.
And it was weird. It was just, but I also was just dumbing down the mental state of human, like the human knowledge, you know, like psychology, and then you go into sociology, and then you go into hospitality. It's like, you know, it's memorizing your being a medical professional to a social professional of dealing with people, and then now you're just dealing with people. It's hospitality. Yes.
But less and less books. That's the direction we're going in.
So I felt like I was dumbing it down, but then also I came to realize this, like, I'm already in the industry, so I completely dropped out of college and then went into sushi just full force. I can say that my dad was not the happiest.
Yeah.
My mom was not the happiest. But the day that he visited the sushi bar that I was working at, I think was the day that he kind of realized, okay, well, hold on, he actually might have found something that could become a successful job for him if he doesn't flake out like he usually does.
You weren't just bussing tables like you thought you were doing.
Yeah, or getting sake boxes, getting yelled at all
the time. And parents are, that's a tough thing. I remember, my dad is traditional Asian parent in many ways. So I remember him, I was in a car with him, and I'm in architecture.
Yeah.
And this was just a few years ago, and he says, you know, when are you going to get serious and stop delivering the mail and getting coffee for the real architects? I said, what are you talking about? He's like, well, you're not really doing the real work. And it was, just so happened, we were driving down this one section of town that I had worked on a whole bunch of buildings in this section. because it was at Bradley University in Peoria. So I'm like, well, I designed that one, and I worked on that one, and that one, I didn't do the whole thing, but I came in at the end and worked on the electrical diagrams. So I've done these.
Perfect timing, by the way.
It was.
Oh. That's awesome. Okay,
so we've had,
yeah, that's, can relate to that. Pretty much the same situation. It was just, you know, he always saw me as kind of working all the time because I always wanted that extra cash.
Mm-hmm.
So I would work in restaurants and, you know, bus tables or work in the kitchen or mm-hmm. whatever. Maybe so he thought maybe I was just doing that as a Japanese restaurant, but then he saw me, I was behind the sushi bar.
Mm-hmm.
You know, making these rolls next to, I didn't have my counter. I was just standing next to one of the chefs. There was like four of them.
Mm.
I was just in a corner, no window or nothing. I was just like in a corner making rolls, you know. Mm. It was that was enough.
Right.
And yeah, I mean, that, I don't know if that's something to offer him, but he was still kind of disappointed because it was still not an academic situation. So but then he bought me my first sushi knife.
Oh, okay.
So, I mean, that was cool in a sense that, okay, well, he's not accepted the fact that I was doing this, but
he's come to terms.
He's come to terms, and he'll play cheerleader if he needs to, right? But that's always been my dad. He's always been supportive of what I was doing. He just wanted me to continue. Mm. As long as I continue, it was cool. But yeah, that's where it started.
Looking for great entertainment? Want to find the best deals on food and drinks? Use the PubPal app to find great establishments near you. View daily specials, find live bands, karaoke, even poetry. If you're looking for something to do, PubPal is the answer, and it's only a click away. Download the app on the Apple Store and get the Android app on Google Play. And don't forget to like them on Facebook. Visit PubPalUSA.com to find out more. That's PubPalUSA. PubPalUSA.
So what was the transition from Japan? So you're working here, you're learning the basics, obviously, but at a certain point, you wanted to take it to the next level or go back to, you know, the place where it all started?
Yeah, well, it's funny. It's just, so the sushi in the States, it's very, I didn't know, really. I mean, I did know, but I didn't know. It was like, there's a lot of rolls, roll forward in the United States. It's rolls after rolls after rolls. And I mean, that's where the culture of sushi in America has always been. So you go to one restaurant, you're making a California roll, you're making a dragon roll, caterpillar roll, volcano roll, whatever roll.
All these crazy rolls with different stuff piled on top and things coming off of them and everything.
Yeah, and then you realize you're eating like 18 different things in your roll. It's just like,
right.
Now it's like almost like a psychology like exams, like you're memorizing like all these ingredients that go in this one roll. But it's crazy how you can do that.
Mm.
But
the Japanese sushi is different, much more simple.
Refined. Mm. And it was, so I was working at a few, bouncing around, learned my sushi at Restaurant Hama, went to a place called Haiku in Ceylon, and it was just turning into monotonous, just cluster, just every restaurant, same rules, every restaurant, same rules. Mm-hmm. So the level of creativity was just starting to depreciate in my mind, and I'm just starting to now doing it really just for money. It was like there's no future I could sense in doing it anymore. So I'd taken a couple hiatuses, and I worked at an Italian restaurant, quit sushi. I was like, I'm going to go just work at a kitchen for a little bit. Clear my
mind. On the calamari instead.
Yeah, you know, it was like pasta, whatever. I love, that's my next thing. It was just sushi, and then I like my pizza and my pasta.
Oh, yeah.
So that's something I love. So I worked at a place at Spaggio, you know, and then now I'm like 21.
Mm-hmm.
So like I'm going out drinking, and now I'm just in that world that when I was 16, just hearing about, and now I'm just consumed in it, like going out. Because we have total opposite schedules of the 9-to-5-er. We please the 9-to-5-er, and then we have our own little world at after midnight. So it's,
You know, I never have worked in a restaurant or a bar, but I was I worked the door a couple times at a friend's bar, and you don't get done till 4 or 5 in the morning.
Yeah,
and you know, it was tough. I just did it a handful of times just to kind of fill in. But it would be real hard to have that schedule all the time.
All the time. And then you end up just going to someone's house, drinking until 7 in the morning, and then you just repeat.
And then you get to, but you get to sleep till 1 or 2.
Yeah,
and
you sleep till like 3 when you go on to work. So
it works. No, it's not good for your liver.
But you're young, you know, so it worked out. So yeah, I take those hiatuses, and then personal issue. I had my mother had a stroke back here in Cincinnati, so that triggered something where I had to make a decision that I needed to move back home,
and help out with the family.
Yeah. But during that same time, I got an offer here in Cincinnati at Embers.
Okay.
In Montgomery, to help out with their sushi program. They're brand new. They're not open yet. And it was a good chance for me to kind of see how the opening process of a restaurant goes. So that was really cool, especially at my young age. I was like 22.
Yeah.
And 22, 23. And I got the chance to see the opening.
Okay, getting in on the ground floor, seeing how the business sets up, the issues that you're gonna
with Wall Street equipment. It was really
from the beginning.
From the beginning, you know, plate work and all that stuff. Yeah. So it's really cool to see experience, and that was actually my current business partner John's, first venture as being one of the owners for Embers.
Okay,
so that's how our connection kept going. But. Again, it was the roles that I've learned in the past, being puked into this, for Ember's menu, the same kind of idea, same kind of, roles.
Well, so, I've had the dragon roll at this place, I want the dragon roll at this place, and
I just kind of made this new dragon. You know, and it was just...
So you got a little control then over the menu.
Yeah, had a little control over the menu and just put what I knew in. But then, again, I'm young. There's got to be more.
Right.
I'm going into this monotonous world again. So I left, worked at a place called Aoi in Newport.
Okay.
Not currently there anymore.
Not there. I did eat there when it was still open though.
Yeah. I was there in the beginning. They were just opening as well, but they didn't have any sushi chefs, so they hired me on as kind of like their sushi chef. Took it, and then the clientele again. It was a lot more fresh fish, which is cool. Like I broke down more fish.
Right.
It wasn't just opening packs of fish.
Okay.
Or filleted.
Throwing them in the microwave, defrosting them, and slicing them up.
Yeah, running it underwater. You know, kind of. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, force thawing. Right. that wasn't done. I mean, there was a lot more fresh fish there. It was very cool to see. So I got more in the breaking down the fish and kind of like the bat before it goes in the display case kind of work. So it was cool.
Yeah, so what is something that, you know, somebody's going out for sushi or they're buying it at the display case at Kroger's. What are some things to keep an eye out for that you are actually getting what you think you're getting? It's fresh. It's what they said it was. It's not some carp that somebody pulled out of the river.
Yeah. There's like, you know, if the fish looks, I mean, when I break it down, there's a way of breaking down fish that makes it look showcase material. And then there is fish that you open up in a package that is already looks showcase material, you know. It's like, but you know, some people go out to sushi bars, they don't get actual red snapper, it's tilapia, you know, it's tuna, but it's been like dyed tuna. So if it's like too red, like as red as like a candy cane, like red,
then you're probably looking at something that's been dyed.
If your tongue looks like you've been drinking Kool-Aid after you eat it, it's not authentic. It, something might be up.
Something's up. Something with that. And then, you know, super white tuna. Mm. Yeah, if there's that, if that's on the menu, it's probably not a reputable sushi bar. Mm. To be honest. Mm. But
how long does octopus keep? Because that's one of my favorite things. But you never, whenever I go to a place, I never know. Because if you get it, I've had it where I've chewed it, like I was chewing on a piece of rubber for 15 minutes. Mm-hmm. And that's no good. And then you have it where it's delicious.
Yeah. Yeah. And then, it's pre-packaged octopus.
Okay.
Pre-blanched.
Okay.
That's very chewy.
Okay. That's what I was getting then, huh? Okay.
The raw octopus that braised and cooked, that's the stuff that takes a little more time.
Mm-hmm.
And then you can always tell if it's been done like nice and slow, or if it was just like a quick blanch and then tastes like a rubber mat.
Right.
You know? And that's, some people like that, most people don't.
Yeah.
So, yeah, octopus has been very popular around menus, I think. You see it all over on, not just Japanese cuisine, but, you know, just kind of like in your seafood joints, you'll see it.
Yeah.
Yeah, more often.
Yeah, more and more.
Yeah, which is good.
That's all for this week's show. Thanks again to our guest, Hideki Harada, co-owner and executive chef of Kaze Japanese Pub in Cincinnati's Over the Rhine District. For more information on Kaze and our guest, visit the restaurant at 1400 Vine Street in Cincinnati, Ohio. Go to www.kazeotr.com. That's www.kazeotr.com. Or check out Kaze OTR on Facebook. Be sure to tune in next week as Hideki and I compare notes on our experiences in Japan and discuss a few run-ins with the Yakuza. Nihei de biru and mata ya. Everyone, like the show? Enjoy hearing interviews with martial artists from around the world? Then share it with a friend, family member, co-worker, everyone at your dojo, your fellow karateka. You can find new episodes every Sunday at choptalk.podbean.com. That's choptalk.podbean.com. And don't forget to like the show on Facebook. Thanks.